Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning, Colm O'Mungoin here, standing in from Clare, coming up on today's programme.
And I see this debate.
This is not a democratic forum. This is not representative of the people of Ireland.
It's holy war at the Consultative Forum on Security. We'll go live to discussions in Cork as they begin today and look at Ireland's track record on defending itself. Why does vital cancer treatment come at the cost of maternity leave? We hear from a survivor who's campaigning for change. We're paying nearly 50% above the EU average for goods and services in Ireland. Why and who can change it? And we'll bring you the latest on the missing OceanGate submersible as that news comes in. You can text us this morning on 51551 and you can also email todaycb@rte.ie. But first, I'm joined here in studio by Simon Harris, the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science. You're welcome to the programme, but you're glad you're not in Cork.
Well, look, I think the scenes in Cork are, they're disappointing, if not unsurprising. I just never understand why anyone wants to stifle debate. I think we've seen an incredible effort over the course of the last week to try and stifle a really important discussion. And in many ways, we've had over the last week a discussion really about process. I'm hoping now that we get into a discussion about actual substance of really important issues around the security and protection of this country into the future. And look, people have a right to protest. They made their views known. But at this moment in time, we now actually need to get into the work of the forum.
And from whom would you see the effort to stifle debate?
I think there's been a lot of discussion and commentary in recent week. People have given their views, lots of different people have given their views. But ultimately now we have an opportunity through this forum to hear a range of expert views and opinions across many different workshops and sessions on a whole variety of topics. And it's actually been unfortunate, I think, over the course of the week where the discussion has really kind of polarised or focused on an issue around neutrality, or indeed an issue that the government has no intention of changing its position on,
sure,
in relation to membership.
Sure, led by the President in his remarks on Sunday.
The President has a right as a citizen of this country to make his views known.
But
all citizens in this country, in this republic, have a right to make their views known. And the government has an absolute right. And I would actually think the government has an absolute responsibility to not shirk these discussions. And absolutely, the government, in using its own executive authority, is entirely right within its rights and entirely right to actually establish this forum. But ultimately, the forum will come back to government with its output in time.
For the record, the President, as a citizen, the sentiments he expressed, you disagree with those sentiments?
I don't agree with the sentiments, yeah.
Sure, okay. On your own beat, you've announced an increase in college places across veterinary and healthcare, but you're saying that with investment, an additional 208 doctors, 692 nurses, 196 pharmacists and 63 dentists and 230 vets can be trained every year. They can, if the money is there, is it?
I believe it will be. So yesterday, I should just say, tell your listeners what we did yesterday. I mean, yesterday we had published the output of a very long process. We went out to the system, to all the universities, and said, what more can we do in relation to health education in Ireland and in relation to veterinary medicine? Rather than this annual kind of scramble, can you create a few more places in medicine, a few more places in nursing, a few more veterinary places? What could actually the horizon look like over the next few years? And the result is really encouraging. An independent panel that I put in place has assessed these applications as viable. And now myself, the Minister for Health and the Minister for Agriculture, will work in advance of the budget to make progress on this.
Viable if, I mean, with people training in these specialities, there needs to be lab facilities.
Correct.
There needs to be all of the resources in place, something as basic as, you know, the study resources to be there, library places, all of those kind of things. Link-ups with hospitals to train these people. Was all of that investigated, whether or not the hospitals have the training capacity to link in with those college places.
Absolutely. And if you look at the assessment panel that we put in place, it had education experts and officials, but it also had people working in the Department of Health, people working in the Department of Agriculture. It had people involved, for example, in the Veterinary Council, the Chief Veterinary Officer from the veterinary side of things as well. So this was, I think, the most joined up effort that we have undertaken in relation to health education and veterinary medicine education, definitely in a generation. And what it basically says is we can do an awful lot more in this country to make sure that we have the people to work in crucial public services like health and also crucial industries like agriculture and agri-food. We see a situation every year, Colm, the Leaving Cert is nearly coming to a close now, where many Irish students go abroad to study. Some students may choose to go abroad. Many Irish students find themselves having to go abroad because despite even doing very well in the Leaving Cert, they can't get access to a place.
So you would envisage the points coming down as a result of this initiative ultimately, would you?
I would, because points by their very nature are about demand and supply, how many people applied for a course and how many places there are. If you can increase the number of places, that definitely has downward pressure on points.
Right. I mean, people will still go abroad. And the more people that go abroad in addition to these places, if they come on stream, will mean more doctors for Ireland. I mean, my own GP trained in the Czech Republic. He hasn't done me any harm yet. So presumably you would still want those people going abroad and training and coming back.
Yeah, no, entirely. And I'm sure your own GP is a very fine person, but that's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that we shouldn't see a situation where young men and women sitting in perhaps exam halls today wanting to become vets, if I use that as an example, find themselves having to, not wishing to go, having to go because despite getting really good Leaving Cert results, there's actually only 85 places for veterinary medicine and one veterinary school in UCD. What this report shows, and we've a body of work to do now, but what this report shows is that we could actually establish new veterinary schools. We could establish them in the regions and we could try to correct the imbalance that saw 65% of newly registered vets last year having been educated abroad.
Who's going to teach the vets? Because if we're short of vets and you need people who are experts in the area to continue in practice, who's going to train the vets if we expand the vet training places?
So that hasn't come up as an issue, quite frankly, in the assessment process. So each of the universities has shown an ability to deliver these programmes. What they now need is two things. One, to work with us in terms of a full business case. And then secondly, for myself, Minister McConnellogue and Minister Donnelly to engage in the capital plan discussions that will be happening around the estimates.
Right. How do you retain people? Because we saw with Brexit, for example, the demand in the UK for vets, for phytosanitary checks and all of those kind of things are going to be very necessary. So we train people here, but the perennial problem is keeping them here, and the things that are driving them away are the health system. So what are you going to tell to these prospective students if these places come on stream? You know, what kind of a system is waiting for them?
So recruitment and retention is absolutely a challenge in our public services and indeed a challenge in many countries' public services. But we do know that one of the issues people working in the health service will say is the more colleagues they can have, the more their work environment improves. So there's a bit of chicken and egg here. I note, for example, the INMO welcoming the very significant increase that we intend to do in nursing places. But I think one of the exciting things about the places that have come forward and the options that have come forward through this process is the pathways. So, for example, more and more providing graduate entry routes into things like pharmacy and also a really exciting proposal from the University of Galway around a medicine programme specifically focused on rural and regional Ireland, where the placements for the students from the very first day would be in rural GP practices, so that you're educating people and indeed immersing people in the communities that you'd hope they then choose to serve.
Right, those rural practices are in short supply. You have an ageing GP population. So again, are the training places going to be there if you have a number of people who may well want to work near where they grew up and provide the kind of service they may have seen in their own locality, or which maybe indeed their own parents provided? Where are they going to get their training?
Yeah, no, and I can't emphasise this point enough. This hasn't been a kind of solo run by my department or by education or by colleges. The benefit of the exercise that we've done and brought to Cabinet and published now is that the Department of Health have been involved from the very start in terms of the whole issue of placements with the HSE, and we're very satisfied that the proposals that have now been deemed viable have looked at the full spectrum of what is required, not just the college place, but also the clinical placement.
Right, so not just a proposal. Is it as nailed down as providing a business case with attached figures for where the investment would go in advance of this budget? And if so, what's the timeline for seeing this?
So health and veterinary, they're slightly different. So in relation to health, the Minister for Health and the Department of Health are of the view that all of the places that have been identified are required by the health service. So Minister Donnelly and myself will now work in that budgetary process to get this underway. In relation to veterinary medicine, myself and Minister McConnellogue now have to do an exercise where the Department of Agriculture will identify how many of the extra places they believe they need. And then him and I will engage in advance of the budget process as well. Some of these places across veterinary and healthcare can come on stream in as quickly as September 2024. But this is a multi-annual plan that will take a few years. And I'll be able to give you a very direct answer to how many places will be there in 2024 after the budget in October.
Right. And the nurses who would qualify under the increased nursing places wouldn't be coming on stream until 2028. The INMO, who you mentioned, welcoming this. They also want to know what the plan is between now and 2028 to deal with the situation they're in before those people come on stream.
And look, the Minister for Health works very closely with them in relation to growing nursing numbers and continuing to put in place safe staffing numbers in our hospitals. But just because, and I don't mean this in relation to the INMO's comments, but more broadly, just because something takes a period of time to do is not a reason not to do it. In fact, if you want to break some of the cycles that we see in this country of kind of constant challenge, the only way you do it is by looking beyond tomorrow to saying, actually, where can we get in a couple of years? And that's what we're trying to do here, have a kind of strategic view. Where can we get to with health education so we can properly staff our health service? Right. Where can we get to in veterinary medicine so we can support agriculture?
The overall picture of third level funding has to be looked at as a major context on this as well, because medicine students and veterinary students, but more particularly medicine students, have become somewhat of a cash cow for our third level colleges. So how do you ensure that a lot of the extra places aren't being given to people from outside the European Union, and it may be of little benefit to Irish students?
Yeah, it's a great question, but let me assure you, every single additional place that we're outlining here are for the CAO process or the graduate entry route through the EEA. So in other words, these places are additional and separate to any decisions that universities may make in relation to international students. And just to show you what that looks like, if you take, for example, medicine, we will have about 69% of medicine students in Ireland by the end of 2023 will be from the European Union. That number will go to 73% as a result of this extra investment. So we'll be moving to a situation that for every, let's say, every 10 doctors being educated in Ireland, over 7 of those will be Irish students or students from the European Union.
Right. And the €17,000 that it costs for a graduate student to pay, what's the annual cost of going to college, can you see any way of doing something about that to entice people in to take up some of these new places if they're available?
Yeah, I can. And I'm looking at two issues in relation to that. So this is students who have already got a degree and come back at a graduate level to study medicine. At the moment, they do pay high fees. There's two ways.
The same as students from outside the European Union, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, there's a graduate entry route. I do think there's two ways of helping them. One is to try and broaden access to the student support scheme, which they're currently not in a position to access. And then the second is to increase the contribution that the state makes towards their fees. And I'm looking at both in the run-up to the budget.
Right. Is there a way where the way the Defence Forces used to pay for degrees, where you served for a certain period of time, if the state paid for your degree, you served out time, or you paid back what the state had invested? Is there a way of looking at that in order to retain people for a certain amount of time?
So that would be a policy matter for the Department of Health, and we'd be led by them in relation to that. My priority is to expand the number of places, but also to reduce the cost of going to college for all our students. And students will know, and their parents will definitely know, that last year we reduced college fees, for example, for the first time in 27 years. We've increased student grants by well more than the rate of inflation, between 10 and 14%. All student grants increased by from January. And I think we can do more in the budget. But what I'd like to do more in the budget is actually get into some of the issues you're raising here, which are, you know, certain groups who are at a particular financial disadvantage when they're trying to access the education system, and see if we can do more to support them.
Well, everybody who studies a certain distance from home is at a financial disadvantage. So what about the issue of accommodation for students? Is that, where will that be built? Because there's talk of more of it being built, but where will it be built and how will it be priced?
So there's two parts to this. Firstly, when I became minister, we changed the policy in relation to student accommodation. Up until then, it had been entirely reliant on either the private market or a university to use their own funds to build student accommodation. The state had never contributed a euro, quite frankly. We've changed that now. And any university that has had planning permissions to build accommodation that was stalled, we're working with them to get those projects going. So over 1,100 beds in Galway, in Maynooth, in DCU and in Limerick have now moved forward as a result of the state for the first time ever part funding them.
And have you sought any guarantees on affordability in exchange for that funding?
Yes, I have. So every cent of investment that the state is putting in is being given back, if you like, in the equivalent of rooms being provided below market rent. So any investment the state makes, the state gets at least that share of the investment back.
Market rent for the area in which the accommodation has been built, or
yes.
How is that judged?
It'll be for the area in which it's built, and the levels have not yet been set.
Right, that's still pretty hefty for Dublin, isn't it?
It'll be a significant improvement, but I've got to be really honest here. This has to be about supply in the first instance. There's lots of different ways I can assist with affordability, and the government can assist. SUSI grants, reducing fees. Crucially, though, we don't have enough housing in Ireland. And I believe that my sector, the third level sector, can play a really important role in building a lot more. Today, I'm announcing the next phase, which is that we are now appointing experts to help all our technological universities, our new universities in the regions, in Castlebar, in Sligo, in Athlone, in Waterford, in Carlow, to start building their own student accommodation. And within 8 weeks, they will have plans back as to how many beds are needed in each of those parts of the region. So this is really exciting because we've never built student accommodation, quite frankly, for the technological universities. Or what were the institutes of technology. And we are not going to be found wanting as a government, and I know the Taoiseach shares this view, in providing assistance to colleges to get accommodation underway at scale, because the benefit is huge, not just to students. If you can start freeing up a three-bed semi that is being rented by a number of students, it's making it available for a family as well. So the benefit is definitely twofold.
Right, well, the benefit is there, providing the cost is considerably below what the three-bed semi is. People have to be attracted into student accommodation. At the same time, the student accommodation has to some degree pay for itself. So is the state prepared to heavily subsidise, like happens in other countries, subsidise the cost of that accommodation to students to make it affordable?
Oh yeah, and be clear, since November, we have for the first time ever been using taxpayers' money to enable colleges to proceed with student accommodation projects that were stalled, that simply wouldn't have been built. And in return for that, now having conversations with the universities around affordability. That is a game changer, I believe, for student accommodation. Again, building these things takes a bit of time, but not a reason not to do it. We have to break this annual cycle.
All right. Well, one of the issues with regard to construction comes under your own portfolio as well, and this is the issue of apprenticeships. Now, the backlog for apprentices waiting over 6 months for their off-site time, and anyone who's not familiar with this, if you're an apprentice, you do on-site time, which is the practical part of your work, and then you do off-site time, which is the theory behind being an electrician or a plumber or what other, whichever craft apprenticeship you're doing. Now, it initially went down to about 4,000 in February, according to a parliamentary question you answered. And then it was back up to over 5,000 in June. So the situation, after improving, has got worse again.
From that month-to-month comparison, you're correct. But the truth...
Well, it was cumulative figures given in the PQ answer. The first one was up to January 2023, I think it was. And the next one was figures given up to May 2023. And that is disimproved by 1,000. There are now 1,000 apprentices who cannot complete their apprenticeship because the classroom time isn't available to them.
No, your figures are entirely correct, but I just wanted to make the point that the COVID backlog, as it's referred to, when education was closed, when workshops were closed, did see that waiting time extend to over 11,000 apprentices. It did get down to 4,000. It's now at about 5,000. But
why is it disimproving since COVID, when that particular excuse isn't there?
I believe it was a slight blip, and the trend remains downward. As recently as last week, I received an assurance from Sullis, the agency that has responsibility for further education and training, that they expect the COVID backlog to be gone by the end of the year. So the additional wait times that people have been experiencing, we expect to be gone during the course of 2023.
So nobody, by the end of this year, nobody, that's a commitment, nobody will be waiting, or at least none of those 5,000 people will be waiting anymore.
That's the commitment that Sullis are working to and have given me. We have provided €30 million in additional funding, but we monitor this issue very closely. All of this is happening against the backdrop of more people being hired as apprentices than ever before. We set a target of having 10,000 new apprentices in Ireland every year by 2025. I believe we're going to exceed that target at least a year early at this stage. We'll likely see more than 9,000 new apprentices this year.
Right.
But it is absolutely true that there are some people who started their apprenticeship during the COVID period who've waited longer than they should have. And Sullis's commitment to me is to rectify that backlog by the end of the year.
What about your own apprenticeship? You've been a minister for quite a while. There's plenty of talk about you wanting the top job, whenever that top job arises. Are you prepared to be more explicit about that now that your party is at 18% in the opinion polls, a historic low, worse even than when the austerity measures were being implemented?
Well, look, I've been very explicit in relation to this matter that there's absolutely no vacancy for the leadership of Fine Gael.
Hearing any of these mutterings?
That I, just to finish the point here, that I absolutely fully support and work closely with the Taoiseach. And We do need to do better, though. And everybody from the Taoiseach down has made that point. Right across the Fine Gael organisation, there is a hunger from all of us to see an improvement in our poll figures. But rather than fixating on polls, the way I believe we'll improve them is by fixating on delivery. And every single member of the Fine Gael team is absolutely working on that.
Right. Is there a bit of a desperation on that front? I mean, three junior ministers writing an article about tax cuts, and even that is out of kilter with what public opinion is, according to the latest Irish Times opinion poll, which says people want delivery on services, not €1,000 in tax cuts.
I read the poll, but look, the constituents that I meet and the people I meet around the country are very concerned with the cost of living, are very concerned about making ends meet, are very concerned about the fact that despite working as hard as they possibly can, are still struggling with a whole variety of costs. And the Fine Gael party makes no apology for stating our position is that the harder you work, the more of your own money you should be in a position to keep. And particularly when things are going economically well, we should be looking at measures that ensure people don't pay the higher.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, though? I mean, you've been in power for 12 years. Some of that was the austerity years. You have more money than you've ever known what to do with before, and yet you find yourself at this position in the polls because it seems people don't want what you're offering.
No, I don't think that's right at all. I mean, the reality of the situation is Fine Gael has never been in government for three consecutive terms. We are living through very, very challenging times. We've come through a Brexit scenario, a COVID pandemic, a cost of living crisis.
Sure, but why is it challenging for your party in particular?
I think polls come and go. There have been some polls that have shown our party doing better than some of our coalition partners. There have been others showing the opposite. I think even this time last year, we might have been at 18% in an Irish Times poll as well, only to have actually then seen the poll fortunes reverse. But let's be really clear. There's polls now nearly every week of every month. The issues that the people will vote on, I believe, in the next local elections, European elections, general elections, will be focused on delivery, how government responds to some of the big challenges we're facing. We know what they are, making real and tangible improvements in relation to housing, some of the discussions we're having around how my sector can help with that. The cost of living situation as well. And I think cost of living is not just about tax, of course. It's about other big issues that we have strong views on around childcare as well.
All right, Simon Harris, Minister for Further Education. Thanks for coming up. We're going to go to that consternation at the Consultative Forum in Cork.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.